to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, your source for learning more about fly fishing in cold water, warm water, and salt water. Hello, I'm Roger Maves, your host for tonight's show. On this broadcast, we'll be featuring Aaron Jasper, and we'll be answering your most important questions on European nymphing. This show will be 90 minutes in length, and we're broadcasting live over the Internet. If you'd like to ask Aaron a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use that Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. And while you're there, make sure you sign up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Just fill in your name and email address in the form on our homepage, and we'll keep you informed. This broadcast is being recorded and will be available for playback on our website within 24 hours after the show ends. If you have to leave early, you can return to the website at your convenience and listen to the broadcast at any time. The content of this broadcast is copyrighted and is the property of the Knowledge Group, Inc., doing business as Ask About Fly Fishing. Recordings or transcriptions of this program cannot be distributed or sold in any form. When we return, we'll be talking with Aaron Jasper about European nymphing. You're invited to the 2009 Federation of Fly Fishers Annual Conclave and Show. This is the first time the event will take place in Loveland, Colorado. Conclave is the Federation of Fly Fishers' annual education and fundraising event and includes attendees from around the world. The Conclave offers workshops, programs, demonstrations on fly tying, fly casting, fly fishing tactics, aquatic entomology, fly rod building and angling aesthetics, water safety, and many other related topics. They're also offering youth and women's programs, conservation and education forums, photo contests, author book signings, and much, much more. The Conclave will be held from July 29th through August 1st, so mark your calendar now and get ready for an incredible event. For more information, go to the Federation website at www.fedflyfishers.org. That's fedflyfishers.org. Before we introduce Aaron, we'd like to let you know about the great gifts we have to give away tonight. For our drawing tonight, we'll be giving away a 3-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers and a 1-year subscription to Fly Fusion magazine. So you have two chances to win tonight in our drawing. Now, if you haven't registered yet, you need to go to our homepage and click on the link that says, under Aaron's section, that says, click here to register for our drawing. Once you click on that link, just fill out the form and we'll announce the winners at the end of the show. We'll also be giving away a $20 gift certificate courtesy of Front Range Anglers in Boulder, Colorado. Now, to win that, you're going to have to be the first person to correctly answer the question that we ask at the end of the show. And the question's going to be about something that Aaron and I talk about during the show. So listen carefully and use your fast typing skills at the end. And you'll be using that text box, by the way, on the homepage, where you can also ask questions. That's where you'll answer this question at the end of the show. Our guest speaker tonight is Aaron Jasper. Aaron Jasper fishes an average of 200 to 250 days a year and has been fly fishing since the age of 7. Aaron has been fortunate to fish some of the great trout streams around the country, fishing extensively in the eastern United States, as well as traveling across the country to experience some of the best fly fishing available out west. As a result of his travels, Aaron has learned many techniques, flies, and rigs that have enabled him to constantly grow and improve as a fisherman. In recent years, thanks to his very close friend, Davy Wanton, Aaron has become a true student of many European nymphing techniques and other methods of trout fishing. Along with traditional style wet fly fishing, Aaron has become a great source of Euro-nymphing knowledge. Aaron is always happy to demonstrate a variety of Euro-nymphing techniques, from short-leader Polish and Czech methods to longer-leader Spanish and French techniques. While this style of fishing is an investment to learn, it's often unequaled in its fish-catching potential. In 2007, along with his friend web designer Justin Massimo, I hope I said that right, Aaron founded Trout Predator Online, a fly fishing community specifically aimed at disseminating and sharing good information about fly fishing techniques and destinations. Since then, the community has grown to over 650 members and is home to some of the very best information on the web about Euro nymphing. Aaron and Justin produce multiple short videos every month on everything from fly tying tutorials and tips to short destination adventure videos. All can be found on their website, including information on European nymphing techniques. Well, Aaron, welcome to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio.
How are you guys?
Hope
I can live up to that introduction there.
Well, you better. We're looking forward to it. Well, folks, tonight, as almost all the subject matters that we cover on the show, It's intensive and full of information, and probably more than we can handle in a show tonight. But we're gonna, Aaron and I are gonna do our best to try to convey as much of that information as possible. Let's just get right to it here, Aaron. We did get a ton of questions, and I always want to thank our listeners for supplying those questions because it makes our show very interesting and fun, and that's the whole idea, is to make sure that we answer the questions that are most interesting to you. Let's take a look here. We've got one from Steve in Utah, and this is kind of interesting. He says, first there was Polish nymphing, then Czech nymphing, now French and Spanish. How do you keep on top of all these new techniques? So you want to talk just a bit, Aaron, in general about European techniques?
Hey, you know, guys, Steve, that's actually a very good question. It's really overwhelming, actually, a lot of this stuff. You know, you hear about one thing, and then you read about another thing, and then you look in an article in a magazine, you know, you see another thing, and then you speak to one of your friends, and he tells you something else. Well, I think that here in the United States, a lot of the anglers are very good at the short line, like the Polish and the Czech nymphing, because it's very similar to what they've done with, like, a Joe Humphreys method style of nymph fishing, or, you know, like, Leisering style of nymph fishing. It's very similar. Just the flies are weighted, and there's no split shot and put, you know, to, you know, give added weight to get your flies to the bottom. Now, the ones that are more difficult to understand, I think, for a lot of anglers and, are, you know, take a lot more skill level to fish are the French and Spanish fishing, you know, nymphing styles. But I'd like to say one thing. When I speak to friends, we use these national terms just to tell each other how we're fishing. Like, if I'm going to fish a French style nymphing, that means that I'm fishing upstream of me the entire time. And if I'm going to fish a Spanish style nymphing, that's, you know, like when, you know, for, draw an example, when you're indicator nymphing and you're fishing like a, you know, a piece of pie in front of you, you're making a cast like 45 degrees upstream and allowing the flies to drift slightly past you before you pull them out. That's more of a Spanish style nymphing. And, you know, I mean, you just keep ahead of it by just fishing a lot and practicing it a lot. And then when you hear new things, you just adapt. Like, for example, when Lauren first, you know, Lauren Williams, he showed me a lot of this stuff. I have to credit him. You know, he started talking about all these terms, and I was like, oh, boy. You know, I was like, I got to do my homework. So the way I learned about it is just, you know, every once in a while, like, Lauren would show me something new, and it would be an eye-opener. Like, the, you know, when he showed me the cider for the first time, I was like, wow, that's neat. And he says, well, this is like a French and a Spanish style nymphing. You know, and he said, like, this is how you can catch fish that are a little bit further away from you. Because as you guys know, the Polish and the Czech nymphing, you know, they were developed on high mountain, you know, freestone streams for mostly grayling, which is a fish that people tell me that you can almost step on them. They're not spooky. You can get fairly close to them, you know. But in the Pyrenees Mountains that border France and Spain, you have, you know, a tremendous population of Fario-strained brook trout, which, from what everyone tells me, they're very, very difficult to catch. They're very spooky, and the fish are pressured. And a lot of these streams, unfortunately, if the fish gets caught once, it's out of there, so... These European anglers have developed techniques that work on heavily pressured waterways where the fish are, you know, harvested at an alarming rate. So if they work there, they're going to do really well on our streams where the fish are actually released and, you know, the resources are actually cared for. So that's where I really got into this.
Yeah, and so it sounds like it kind of comes down to when you just mentioned the different types of water and so forth, is that I guess a lot of these techniques were developed for the challenge of a very specific type of water. I know Jeff Currier was telling me about when they went to the fly fishing championships in, what was it, Portugal a few years ago?
Yeah, Portugal's tough, they say.
Yeah, that it was just extremely hard fishing and skinny water and hot, and you could see why they used some of these techniques because they were very applicable in the situation. Well, that brings up a question. Mark Power, Halifax, Nova Scotia. Why should I use European techniques for fishing? I catch fish using standard nymphing techniques now. Is this method better for larger trout?
Is this better for larger trout? It depends. Are there larger trout in the stream where you're fishing? The most important thing that I'll speak about a lot of times tonight is that these techniques, the strike detection is much better with all these techniques. You know, you're not using split shot, which causes a dead spot in your line. For example, you know, if you fish a tight line rig, which I, you know, a lot of the questions speak about that. If you fish a tight line rig, you need to add split shot between you and your flies. So that means that when the trout takes your flies, it not only has to grab the flies, it has to move the split shot, which can take, you know, some force, and then it has to move your leader, or, you know, you have to feel it in your hand. So we all know that trout don't really hold on to things for that long a period of time. So strike detection is really, really critical. So in that aspect, I would say that the bite detection, the strike detection, is much better with these techniques than, you know, with a, with a strike indicator or a tight line nymphing method. I mean, the only way that I can think that you can register as many takes with the European nymphing is if you use the bounce rig, where the split shot's placed below the flies, so that there's nothing between your flies and you know, your indicator or your leader that would hinder strike detection. As, you know, the more bites you detect when you're fishing, the more fish you're going to catch. And if the water is suited towards this technique where, you know, you're fishing in riffled water or pocket water, if there's large fish in there, you're going to catch them too. It's not just the technique that's going to catch small fish. It'll catch all the fish in a given, you know, section of stream. It's not one where, you know, like, oh, only a 6-inch trout's going to eat this. No. If there's a, you know, 24-inch trout in that pocket water and your fly goes by him and the fish reacts positively to it, you're going to hook that one too.
And, yeah, there was a question from Don in New York, and you just addressed his question, but he brings up something that may be sticking in some people's minds. He says, Aaron, is this true that these European nymphing methods were refined to achieve wins in competition by racking up head count of many trout, and that the results are often a lot of small trout holding in really fast water? So you kind of just answered his question in regards to that. He was looking to find out if that was just, you know, small fish or large fish as well. So.
Yeah, you know, it's very interesting. The Farmington River, where we fish a lot, a few weeks ago, it was middle of April, speaking about large fish, I went through this run once, you know, and I practiced the fishing on small pieces of water so that when I go through the water, I have to fish it, you know, and turn it over and see where I move the fish. Well, I went through this one section of stream, and they stock the river heavily, I'm not going to lie. And there's, you know, a good amount of holdovers in there. I went through the section one time. I probably caught 10 or 11 fish. I went back through a section of water, really, really fast water, where people would ignore because, you know, they're used to fishing in the pools. They stock trout. You know, they tend to gravitate towards those areas. So I'm fishing an area of really heavily riffled water. And the second go around, after I caught probably 2 or 3 fish easy out of this spot, one little spot, I threw the line in there again, and I hooked the fish. I thought it was, you know, 20, 22 inches. Well, we got it in the net, and we measured it, and it was 28 inches long. So you will catch, you know, everything that's there when you do these techniques right, because the bite detection is super good.
We've got a lot of questions here about Bruce in Colorado, Doug in Seattle, and others here that I can't mention all of them. A lot of people are asking about the types of water and how do you know what to use where and when. So maybe you can talk, and I know later on I'd like to get into talking about Polish and Czech nymphing and Spanish and French and be very specific about those techniques, but can you give us some general information on the types of water this works best in?
Yeah, Bruce and Doug, those are very, very good questions. I'm going to create a visual here. You know when you walk up to the stream, guys, and you know, see, like, fast-moving water, lots of current seams, lots of boulders, heavy turbulence. That's the type of water that these techniques work better in. Places where you can put the trout in a certain location. Places where you can say, oh, there's going to be trout on that current seam. There's going to be trout in front of that rock. There's going to be trout, you know, behind that rock. Places where you can really dissect the water and fish to specific locations are definitely places where these techniques are going to work better. Now, the water depth really doesn't matter. It could be 6 inches deep. It could be, you know, 6 feet deep. As long as you're able to put the fish in a location, these techniques are going to outproduce the majority of other techniques that you can use. And I noticed Doug here, you know, can I expand on this?
Sure, yeah. Oh, go ahead.
I mean, his question says, please explain what techniques work best in each type of water. You know, deep troughs, definitely a place where you can fish these techniques if you can get close enough to it. Riffles, for sure. Pools, okay. Now riffles and pools, that's a kind of gray area with this. If the stream is small enough and you can put the fish in a spot where you can make a many cast and know you're going past fish, that's really, really good. But I fished with Davey Watton a few weeks ago, and this is a good story. He's a tremendous angler. He took, you know, I wanted to take him to a place to challenge him. So I took him to the Never Sink in New York. And this is a place where, you know, I've tried all these techniques. You know, I've tried the French nymphing, the Spanish nymphing. And, you know, I get a couple fish. Well, he went in there with his soft tackles and wet flies and caught at least 8 fish and some big ones. out of water that I had a lot of difficulty even coming up with a couple fish in a few hours. So that just goes to show that, you know, like, even though you're good at these European techniques, there's always something that's going to work better in a different water type. So the main message I want them to take, you know, away with this, Roger, is that this is just one way to approach a certain piece of water in a stream, and it's not going to work everywhere as well as it works in some streams.
And, yeah, Davey we had on our show a month or two ago, and we're going to bring him back, by the way, on wet fly techniques and do another show on that, so that ought to be really, really good as well. You mentioned riffles, pools, and so forth. I take it we're dealing here, again, when we're talking about rough water or riffles, you've got some protection from the fish as far as them seeing you. When you get into pools, you're more exposed, I assume.
Yes.
Them and where it's less effective. I wonder about the drift, too. So could you kind of talk about that a bit?
The ironic thing with the drift, it's really specific as to what technique you're using. There's some, you know, techniques like a Polish nymphing technique where the drift really isn't that long. It's maybe 3 to 5 seconds. Spanish nymphing technique, the drifts can be long depending on, you know, the current speed. And the French, one of the most fascinating things with this whole thing is the French style of nymphing. It's a very, you know, it's an upstream drift that they let the flies basically sit there. They lift the rod up, you know, if you can visualize this, they throw it in, the rod tips high, and they lift the rod up to about, you know, 11 o'clock, and the flies are, you know, lifted out of the water. And a lot of these European techniques are based upon reaction strikes from the fish. So you really don't want your flies in the water for a very long time. Because if the fish see your flies coming, you know, they can disseminate whether they're fake, they're, you know, they're not the right thing, they might move wrong. So I think a lot of times if you drift your flies in the water for too long a period of time, it's actually hurting you. When Davey, you know, we start talking about this, you know, the French nymphing in particular, he said those guys, they cast their line in the water, they count to three, and they recast it. There's no drift. They put it in the water, 1, 2, 3, out. And I noticed that with this, you know, if you tell anybody that's talking about dead drift and, you know, flies being natural, that you could catch fish like that with reaction strikes, with the flies going on the way down, they would think you're a liar, but it definitely works. And as far as the drift goes, I noticed that in a lot of the broken water, natural isn't always the best way to go.
What do you mean natural isn't always? You mean the natural drift?
Like a natural drift. You want the flies to go in the water. You want them to descend. Hopefully the fish sees it on the way down. They take it because they react to it. And then, you know, like a short drift, like 2 or 3 feet. And then another, I saw the Jeff Currier comment where he makes, you know, like very small moves when he, you know, goes through the stream. If you're making short drifts like that and you're taking your time going through the stream, you're probably covering all that water twice as you're going through it the first time. So basically, you know, think about it like you're almost raking the whole riffle. And when you're finished, like, you're going to rake out most of the fish because you presented your flies to the fish in a manner that they want to take them, whether the flies are down near the bottom zone or they're descending through the water column. And I get a lot of strikes, actually, probably almost half the strikes that the flies are descending through the water column, which is something that's very rarely written about or even spoken about because everything is so geared towards dead drift.
Yeah, and that brings up a couple questions in my mind. One, the covering of the water, if you're only leaving it in there for a few seconds and covering, you know, 2 or 3 feet, you got your work cut out for you in a large riffle. I mean, there's a lot of places fish could be, and you're just methodically working it like a grid, I guess, and breaking it into a grid. You're not sight fishing to these fish, right, in general?
Sometimes you're sight fishing to the fish. It depends on the stream that you're fishing. Like, there's a few streams in Pennsylvania, like most notably Spring Creek. You know, you could see a lot of the fish there. A lot of the streams in Colorado that I saw, you could sight fish to the fish. It would be great for sight fishing the fish. As a matter of fact, I don't want to say that this guy, you know, brought about the upstream nymphing, but Sawyer, you know, with the induced take, that is deadly with these methods as far as sight fishing the fish. And, you know, like, you know, I'm sure a lot of people on the, you know, listening in here right now, you know, they have pets. And, you know, like, I have a cat, you know, he's kind of lazy. And if you throw your toy at the cat sits there and does nothing, right? If you pull it away from the cat, what happens? He pounces right on it. So Sawyer, a genius, He was the first person that wrote about this. He would do the induced take, Roger. I don't know if you've heard of that.
Why don't you describe it, because many people may not have. So.
All right. It's upstream nymphing, and he would cast his fly above the fish, and when he thought the fly was near the fish, he would raise the rod tip to pull the fly away from the fish, and that would induce takes even out of some fish that were just sulking on the bottom. He figured out that the fish could actually, you know, be made to act like any other animal and to pounce on something that it thought was going to get away from it. Pretty interesting stuff, you know, if you ask me, because most people think when you see a fish and you want to sight fish to a fish, you need to drift it by the fish and nothing can happen with the fly. It has to sit there just moving by, you know, with no movement at all. But that makes you think, like, what makes a fish actually feed? Does it feed just sitting there with its mouth open? Is it looking for insects that are moving away from it? So my answer would be, you know, like, yeah, fish want to chase something down, whether it's a small mayfly nymph or a caddisfly larva or a pupa, you know, or a stonefly. They want to take something that's moving away from it.
Well, it shows life, I think, and that's what triggers them. I mean, as would running away from a bear or a cougar, you know. They like that.
Yeah, I know.
know?
The bear will get you pretty quick if you start running.
That's right. That triggers their response. Oh, here's prey. I'm going after it, you know. And they say, hey, don't be running away from these animals because that will induce them to come after you. So it makes sense to me.
So maybe Mother Nature's taking care of all those insects by letting them not swim around a lot when they're hatching.
Well, I think what you're saying is, you know, as we always say, there's no silver bullet, right? I mean, hey, if one method isn't working, you know, try the Sawyer method. Try, you know, a Euro method. Whatever, you know, whatever isn't working, try something different, and that may be the ticket for that day in that piece of water.
You know, I teach third grade, and it's all about, you know, like with math. Like, you know, when they're, you know, like I'll use this, what I call a dumb analogy, but it's like solving a word problem, you know. Everybody does it differently. Like one kid, you know, wants to do it where he writes it out. One can do it in their head. Well, same thing with fish. They're all different. They all want, you know, especially sight fishing. Those fish definitely have attitudes. Like one fish wants the thing dead drifted towards it. One fish wants to fly above its head. One fish, you know, needs it not, you know, needs it to move away from it. You know, it's all... Like you said, there's no silver bullet. There's not any one-size-fit-all approach to any of this.
Right, right. Well, Aaron, we need to take a quick break, but when we come back, we'll be talking more with Aaron Jasper about European nymphing. Keeney's Fly Shop in Sacramento, California features classes on all aspects of fly fishing. Keeney's Fly Shop has an extensive inventory and fly tying department and a friendly, experienced staff whose primary goal is your complete satisfaction. Among their many services, one can book private waters or take advantage of their international travel service. Visit their extensive website at www.keeney.com. That's K-I-E-N-E.com. Or call them at 1-800-400-0359. That's 800-400-0359. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with Aaron Jasper about European nymphing. If you'd like to ask Aaron a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. Well, Aaron, before we jump back into the European nymphing, tell us a bit about, you know, you just told us you're a third grade teacher, but, you know, when you're not teaching third grade, what are you doing in the fly fishing world? And be sure to talk about trout predator, because there are a bunch of questions that have come in about trout predator. So you might want to tell us a bit about that.
Well, when I'm not fishing, I'm probably aggravating my girlfriend by going fishing. I mean, I'm not teaching, I'm probably aggravating
You're either
her
going or you're fishing, right?
Yeah. I'm either teaching or kids or I'm fishing. About the website, 3 years ago, you know, we go on, you know, a bunch of these message boards, and a lot of times, you know, it just turns into, you know, like people, you know, making fun of each other and just some nonsense. So we wanted to make a fly fishing internet message board, a community, where people can go there and get good information so that they don't leave more confused than when they came. Because you look at a lot of these, you know, sites and, you know, you hear things that, you know, this guy says this thing and that guy says that thing. You know, I want to have something where people can go there and get up to speed and learn and be more successful fishermen. And I think that we've done a very, very good job at that so far. We're almost, I think we're at 700 members now. It's very busy. It's bigger than anything I ever thought it would be. It started off as just a bunch of friends having like a fly fishing website. And I said, Justin, let's make a message board. And Justin goes, all right, you know, wham, we had a message board. We started off where it was four of us just talking to each other all day. It was pretty lame. But now it's interesting. You know, there's a lot of people from all over the country. They're all excited. You know, they're catching more fish. You know, it's what it should all be about, sharing information, you know, helping people get better. You know, I played a lot of sports in my lifetime, and I know, you know, that you're only as strong as the weakest link. So if you can get everybody catching fish and having a good time, it only builds a sense of community, camaraderie, which is very important, and just being friendly with each other. And, you know, you go to a stream. I remember when I was a kid, my grandpa would run up the stream and leave me there. And I remember a lot of guys, I'd ask them what they're catching fish on, and they were like, I'm catching them on a nymph. And I always said to myself that that was the one aspect about fly fishing that I didn't like. So what I want to do is create like a, you know, a community of people that aren't afraid to share information, that want to see other people be successful. And, you know, when everyone's successful, they're having more fun and the industry grows. And, you know, and also a lot of people, they buy all this equipment and they don't know what to do with it. You know, they go buy a Sage Z Axis or, you know, like a Hardy Gray's rod, and they're like, whoa, what do I do now? The guy sold me the rod. How do I fish with it? So I think that, you know, the biggest thing in fly fishing right now is, you know, your show, it's education. It's teaching people about fly fishing, and that's what, you know, Trout Predator is about, like helping people to be more successful, just educating people.
And so is it a destination for beginners and advanced fly fishing?
Anybody.
Okay.
Anybody can go there, ask any question, and we will answer it. You won't see an unanswered post like 4 weeks later. Your question will be answered, and you will have, you know, some good information to go back out and try next time.
Okay. And what's the website address?
Troutpredator.com is the address. And also, if you go on YouTube, we have quite a few instructional videos on YouTube as well. You know, like knots that you would tie. Actually, for the European nymphing, there's a knot that Davey showed me that we made a video of. There's demonstrations of the European nymphing that we have on the on YouTube, and it's all searchable. You could search, you know, Euro nymphing on the internet. You probably will come up to Trout Predator Online. You could probably search almost anything about fly fishing, and we'd come up because we just want to, you know, see people do better.
Great.
And my friend, and I actually met my friend Justin not catching any fish, and now Justin's doing all right. He's holding his own.
Well, he sounds like he's got a good teacher. Hey, I just got a question in on the internet from someone you know.
Oh, boy.
And his first name's Davey.
Oh, no.
How many Davies do you know? So Davey Wanton down in Flippin, Arkansas.
Yeah.
Says, ask Aaron why he thinks the EU, or European fly fishers, are as good as they are.
I think there's a lot more history in Europe as far as fly fishing is concerned. It's been going on longer. Also, the competitive fly fishing, I think, makes them a lot better. Because in Europe, you know, competitive fly fishing is an accepted thing. And a lot of these techniques that we have that we bring here, you know, especially, you know, like all these, you know, techniques that I'm talking about are all used in competitive fishing because the regulations say that you can't add split shot to your line and you can't use strike, you know, like strike indicators per se. I mean, you could use dry dropper, but it's because these techniques are refined and then they're, you know, accepted there. Whereas here, you know, competitive fly fishing isn't a big deal, which I think it should be. You know, competitive fly fishing, if it's done right, is a very positive thing. It helps people get better. And guys like Davey, another guy Simon, another guy Charles that I've met, they've all been so willing to share information. And I notice in the United States, a lot of the anglers tend to be very secretive, but those guys, like, you know, like they'll help you out, you know, like, you know, they'll talk to you about it. They'll explain things to you. Like they really want to see people get better. Like I just noticed that there's more camaraderie there between the anglers. There's a lot more sharing going on. Everyone's trying to help each other out. And I've been very fortunate that Davey's helped me out a lot, gave me a couple butt whoopings along the way, you know what? It all helps you become a better fisherman and a better person. You know, I learned, you know, some humility going fishing with that guy.
Correct me if I'm wrong here, but that's when I first started hearing a lot about European nymphing techniques is through the fly fishing competitions because, you know, we were going over there and seeing how getting whooped in Europe, you know, the U.S. team going over there and just getting whooped every time. And then they had to start learning these techniques, and then they started kind of filtering back over here. Isn't that some of the migration that happened?
Yes, for sure. I guarantee you that the United States could put up a team that could do well in the World Championships and, you know, finish top three. The caliber of angler is here. They just need to make it more popular, more competitions, more venues, and we can win. You know, like, heck, if the United States could fight their way away from Great Britain with, you know, rocks and, you know, pretty much a BB gun, I think that we can beat some guys at fly fishing. To put a good, you know, historical analogy on it.
Yeah. Well, they're definitely serious over there. We know that. So.
Oh, they're very serious. You know, they're very good. And they're students of the sport. And one thing that Davey really got me interested in, which I don't think that enough American anglers give enough thought to, is the historical, you know, references of this. Like how it started, like why the flies are the way they are. You know, like he had me sit there when I was at his house and read a book, and I'm like, this stinks. I want to go fishing. He's like, well, Aaron, it's good that you can catch them, but you have no clue who made a, you know, like who started using hare's ear, who made the first nymph, or any historical, you know, aspect about wet fly fishing or the guys who created it. And the more I learn historically explains what happens, you know, in the present as far as my fishing.
Let's then jump back in here to a couple of these questions. There were a couple of questions, and maybe you can address this quickly. I still want to get into very specifics on these, but trying to get some of these general things. We did have a question from Pete Gramp in Pennsylvania, and he asked about using any of these techniques in lakes, ponds, larger bodies of water. Is there any use for any of these techniques in still water?
Not really in still water. It'd be pretty tough. I mean, I saw that question today and I reread through it and I said, how can I make a permutation of this to work in still water? It'd be pretty tough.
I mean,
you know, you could fish wet flies and soft hackles and, you know, in still water situations with floating or intermediate line or, you know, a light sinking line, but it'd be pretty tough to fish a weighted fly in a lake with no current. That fly would go right to the bottom and sit there.
And you'd
be yanking on the moss.
Hey, we have Walton, Missouri wants to know, are you aware of any underwater visual observation of the Euronymph techniques? I know, and he says, traditional wisdom says Euronymphers get fewer hits. I don't think that's what you said earlier, but your hookup rate is much higher than traditional mended drift technique. Just wondering if there's any visual evidence to support that theory.
A friend of Justin's actually sent a link to me a while ago, and I actually tried to message Justin to find this link. But there's a video on the internet somewhere of a guy, he's fishing grayling, and you could see his flies drifting into the fish, and every single time the flies got near the fish and the fish took the flies, he detected the strike. He was like a perfect 10 for 10. Now, if you watch the Ozzy Ozefovich videos, I'm sure everyone's seen them, the fish try out everything because they don't have hands. They, you know, and thank God they don't have hands. They, you know, they can only try stuff out with their mouth. So I firmly believe that, like, guys are constantly getting bites that they're not detecting just because the fish are curious. The fly goes by, he sees it, he thinks it's something to eat, they take it in, they spit it out. And I think a lot of times with certain techniques, they spit it out so fast that, you know, they don't detect the strikes, but with these techniques, you're able to detect those strikes that you miss. So to answer the question of less strikes, you know, I think you get the same, but you're able to detect the strikes, if that makes sense.
Sure. Yeah, the fish is doing the same thing. They don't change, but your connection to the fish changes. So
yeah, your ability
you get more hookups.
Your ability to see the strike changes, and that's the big thing. And in competitive fishing, you know, you can't be missing strikes or you're not going to do very well. You're going to have a bad day.
Yeah, we covered the one competition here in Colorado and you would see, you know, guys winning a day with two fish, you know, because the fishing was so tough. So you're right. You can't miss any strike. It could put you out of the competition rather quickly. That kind of brings up, and there were some questions about strike indicators and rigging and so forth, but again, just generally, from what you've just said, should we steer people away from strike indicators and weighted tandem nymphs with the weight up above the flies? Are we really steering, you know, new fly fishers in the wrong direction by teaching them those techniques?
That's a really good question. I think that strike indicator nymphing is a very easy way to teach someone how to fly fish, But so is, you know, the Polish and the Czech methods of fishing. Short leader, you know, not a long cast. Like my girlfriend, she fly fishes a few times a year, and she actually has quite a bit of success using the weighted flies with the short leader technique. You know, not a 20-foot leader, but, you know, a leader that's like 9 or 10 feet. She does quite well. To go back to the strike indicator nymphing, okay, and why I think that it actually hinders your success. Now, we spoke about this before. If you have any weight between your flies and your strike indicator or you, that's a dead spot in your line. All right. Now, when the fish strikes your flies, the fish has to carry that weight and tighten the whole system up. And I've done some bait fishing. I won't be shy.
We're making a note of that.
Well, sorry, guys. But,
we all have, I think.
I always noticed with those stupid carp, you know, because I go carp fishing down the street from my house with the carp. If those fish picked up your bait and they felt any additional weight, they would spit it out right away. And we had the best success using the slip rig, you know, a slip sinker, so that when the fish took the line, they wouldn't spit it out. They'd hold it there. So I think the same thing holds true with the trout. When they grab your flies, the weighted flies, they don't feel any resistance. But when they grab the nymphs with the split shot, they feel some resistance, so they're more apt to spit it out because no fly that they're eating, you know, pulls back.
Mm-hmm.
And if it pulls back before you see it pull back, you're not going to detect a strike and the fish is going to spit the fly out. But with that being said, you can rig up your split shots in ways with strike indicators to combat that by, you know, not putting all your split shot in one section of the line. You can rig up your split shot. I don't know if anybody here is coarse fish. Like Davey and I were talking about coarse fishing and centerpin fishing. They rig up their split shots in an elaborate way to create that tension and contact to the strike indicator in the same, almost the same way you would do at European nymphing. But the majority of anglers just put all their split shot in one spot. So that does create a tremendous dead spot in your line and strikes are missed. But you can use elaborate rigging with the split shots and create the effect and create the contact that you would get to your flies. But what I'm saying is the majority of fishermen don't do that.
What do you mean by elaborate rigging? Be more specific about how you would rig that.
Well, a lot of these guys, they'll use 4 and 5 different size split shots that go from their indicator or their float down to the flies.
Oh.
So they would start off with heavy weights near the strike indicator and then lessen the weights gradually as they go down the line so that you create an arc. Because we all know that in the top of the water column, about 80% of the water speed is within the top 20%. So they would use a lot of weight on the top portion of their leader and lessen the weight as it goes down so that they're mimicking that natural change in the water velocities from the top of the water column to the bottom.
Okay. It sounds also like a successful strategy might be, if you are fishing with indicators, is get rid of the split shot totally and just go to more, start tying more weighted flies.
For sure. One thing that I do now is I do a lot of dry dropper now. It's a very effective technique. And I don't know how many times that I've had a fish come up and whack a strike indicator. Well,
right. Well, yeah.
You know,
hundreds,
and,
huh? Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, and you're sitting out there with the client and you're telling them, oh, these fish, you know, are very, you know, acclimated to the stream and, you know, these are holdover fish. And then whap, fish takes the strike indicator down. Well, now what I do is I just tie dry flies up that are very buoyant. A good pattern was in Fly Fisherman. I think Scott Sanchez. It has a foam back and a snowshoe rabbit wing. And, you know, it's a caddis and you can make it a tan and green and you can hang your nymphs off that. And that's ultimate strike detection again because everything's tight to the strike indicator or your dry fly. And if the fish feels inclined to rise to the surface, well, now you have a hook in your strike indicator so you can now catch those fish.
Right. Well, Aaron, we need to take another quick break, but when we come back, let's dig into these specific techniques and give the folks some really specific information. Sound good?
For sure.
Okay. Royal Gorge Anglers is a full-service fly shop on the Arkansas River in Canyon City, Colorado. They also provide walk, wade, and float fishing guide service on the Arkansas, South Platte, and several private high country ranches. They specialize in fly fishing education and work to assure that everyone taking a trip leaves being a better fly fisher. For the best service and the most fun in the Southern Rockies, visit the folks at Royal Gorge Anglers, the gateway to Southern Colorado. located conveniently on US 50, only 45 minutes from Colorado Springs. For more information, visit their website at www.royalgorgeanglers.com. That's royalgorgeanglers.com. Or call them at 888-994-6743. That's 888-994-6743. Well, you're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with Aaron Jasper about European nymphing. If you'd like to ask Aaron a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. First of all, are we talking about, far as most people are concerned, four named nymphing techniques in Europe, the Polish, the Czech, the Spanish, and the French? Are those the main ones? Are there others?
Those are the main ones. There's no other ones that I know of. I mean,
okay.
I mean, we could make up something. No.
Well, we still got the Belgians, we've got the Germans. We don't want to leave anybody out. You know?
I think four is enough, right?
Yeah, four is enough. Enough confusing. Yeah. So you've talked about Polish nymphing and Czech nymphing being very similar, if not the same. And so let's start out with them because, and I don't know that there is. If there is a difference, let me know. But let's dig into that and maybe describe the technique. And a lot of questions, people are asking a lot of questions about, you know, rod length, weight, and so forth. So let's just dig right in. So what is Polish / Czech nymphing?
It's a short leader technique designed to catch mostly, you know, grayling and, you know, high gradient freestone streams in Europe. I don't want to get mistaken with the history here, but I think it started in Poland, not sure, but I know that those, you know, mostly Eastern European countries, it came from somewhere there. So it's a short leader setup, usually, you know, anywhere from 6 to 12 foot long. They're using 9 to 11 foot rods for these techniques. In Europe, they're fishing, you know, mostly three flies. There's a heavy weighted fly in the middle. They're tied on droppers. I'm giving a real brief description here, so feel free to ask any additional questions. There's three flies. There's a heavier fly in the middle, which would be your, what's called your anchor fly, which is, you know, aptly named. It takes your stuff to the bottom. And then there's a fly tied on the tail, which is, you know, the point fly, and that's usually a lighter mayfly or caddisfly larva of some sort. And then on the top dropper, which is above the anchor fly, a lot of times they'll use a soft tackle or something imitative of what the fish are feeding on, because that fly is fished a little bit higher up in the water column. And can I go into leader design a little bit?
Yeah, sure. And be very specific about the way these flies are tied on when you're talking about they're tied on by tags and so forth. So go right ahead.
Jump All right. Well, from your rod, what I would do, if you could visualize this, is I would, you know, I'd take the fly line out of the rod. And for my butt section for these two techniques, I like to use Golden Strand. It's really inexpensive. There's no fly fishing tax on it, so it's not going to cost you a lot. And 300 yards is probably about a lifetime supply. So my first section of this leader would be 20-pound Golden Strand, which all I do, there's no knot, you know, there's no loop-to-loop connection. It's just a three-turn clinch knot onto the end of my fly line. And then onto that, I make that section 3 feet long. And then onto that, I knot 2 foot piece of 14-pound test Golden Strand, right? And that's my butt section. It's 5 feet long. So in essence, what I've done is I've stepped down my leader really quickly. And attached to that is my tippet. My tippet can be anywhere from 4 to 6 or 7X. And what stepping it down quickly does is it eliminates any tension created by the water reacting on your leader, which would hinder your flies from sinking. We all know that when we buy tapered leaders from the shop, from the store, that if we're nymph fishing, let's say we tie our flies onto the end of the leader and then we tie another fly, we fish two flies. We all know that there's some drag by the surface current on that leader because the butt section of the leader extends almost down to where the flies are, about 20 inches from the flies. So there's a very heavy section of leader that's going through the water column, which would cause drag. And with the way that they fish there and the leader systems, there's none of that going on. They're using extremely fine tippets that are going through the water column. You know, 6X, 7X is what a lot of the guys in the Czech Republic and Poland fish with. And there's almost no drag on your leader when that cuts through the water column. Whereas if they use the tapered leader, they'd have to use much heavier flies, that they'd be hung up a lot less. You're able to get down to the bottom with very small flies using these leader systems. And, Roger, you wanted me to mention the knots. On YouTube, there's the Davy knot. He showed me a knot that you can tie in about a minute, even if you're slow at tying knots, that you can attach even the most heavy section of butt material to the lightest tippet material. And I've even tied, you know, 7X to that 14-pound test, and I have yet to break that knot, whereas my knot in the tippet broke because it got chewed up or got in a rock. So if you check YouTube and you search Trout Predator, you'll find that knot there. And as far as all my droppers, they're all tied on surgeon's knots. A double surgeon's or a triple surgeon's is fine. The lighter the tippet material, if I'm using 6 or 7X, I like to do a triple. But with the 5X, the double holds just fine. So there's no real complicated knots or complicated leader systems for the Polish or Czech nymphing. It's a three-piece leader. It's very simple.
What about the cider that people are asking about?
All right. The cider comes into play when we talk about the longer leader systems, like the French and the Spanish.
Okay.
That's where we're going to talk about a cider. Now, with the Czech or Polish nymphing setup, you can run straight mono from your monofilament or fluorocarbon straight from your fly line if you want to. I just like to use the fluorescent butt section so I have a focal point so I can watch for like the knot that goes to my tippet. I can see that move, and that's another way that I can react to the takes.
Okay.
But a lot of these guys, they have an Andy Burke Czech nymph leader that Umqua makes. If you want to go and just fish a prepackaged leader, you can tie that on and has the droppers pre-made. But you're going to sacrifice that fluorescent butt material. You're not going to be able to see the butt end of your leader.
Okay, so that's your visual cue there. That helps.
Yes.
If you're not feeling it, yeah. Okay. Just a question came in, and since we're just talking about this, Warren Davis in Ohio asked, does a furrow leader have any application in the Czech or Polish?
You could use that and tie a long piece of, you know, fluorocarbon to the end of it, but these knots are so easy to make, and I really like to tie my own leader streamside, whether I'm, you know, wet fly fishing or I'm nymph fishing. I always make my own leaders just so that I know that it's something that I'm comfortable with. And I would imagine that he's just getting started in this. So I would say, like, to go ahead and make a simple leader and, you know, like, design your own leaders, because what works for me might not work for him. So if he's stuck with this one furled leader and it just doesn't work well with him for some reason, or, you know, like they tend to be very limp, he's going to have some trouble casting that. Whereas if he uses this, you know, the golden strand, which is stiffer, it's going to aid him in casting the flies out there and in the strike detection.
Okay.
He can paint the furled leader, you know, with sections of it, you know, fluorescent colors, and that would probably work.
That doesn't really give you any advantage from what you're...
No, there'd be no advantage to that.
Yeah. Another question, Sean, off the internet in Milwaukee, because I'm not too sure they're clear on how you're attaching flies here. He says, are you attaching your droppers to the bend of the above hook or to the eye of the hook? So you want to further describe exactly how these flies are connected to your tippet?
For sure. Very good question. Okay. I'm going to start off with a little joke that my grandpa always told me. He said if they wanted you to tie the flies onto the bend of the hook, they'd have a hole there. That was his joke for that all the time.
There you go. I haven't heard that one. That's a good one.
You know, he always said that. He was a pretty sarcastic guy.
Yeah.
You know, he was pretty tough. But as far as attaching the flies, they're all tied on dropper tags. I don't know if any of you guys are familiar with this. What you do is you make a surgeon's knot, you know, like pretend that you're making a surgeon's knot in front of you, like, you know, like tie the overhand knot, pull it tight. Now, what you want to do is, you know, you have two tag ends there. You have a longer tag end that's the piece you tied on, and then you have a shorter tag end that's the end of the piece that you just tied it on to. And what you do is you cut off the piece of the tag end that's going back towards the fly line, all right? And you're going to tie your top dropper fly onto the piece of line that's going towards your point fly, which is at the end of your system, right? And when you tie your flies on, you can use a clinch knot, and they're all tied onto the hook guy. You could tie a clinch knot or you could tie a Davy knot. That's an excellent knot, Davy Watton knot. It's one of those knots that the most blind guy can tie, which I really like. And it was developed for him with competitive fly fishing because you can't sit there and be rigging your flies up, you know, for 10 minutes. You're going to lose out on competition time. So it's not only, as we were talking about, it's not only something used for competition, but it can help everybody out.
Sure.
So to answer your question.
Aaron, you're going to really need that in about another 30 years. So remember that knot.
I'm sorry. I'll tell you what, the eyesight's starting to go now. I tie those flies that I used to be able to tie 10 years ago, even when I was 22, 23. I'm like, whoa, size 20? What's going on here? We got to use bigger flies.
Yeah.
But to answer his question, both of the flies are free swinging on your line. They're hanging. And that's another thing that aids in the strike detection. When the fish takes your fly, no matter what, the take is registered directly into the line that comes out of the water. Whether it takes the top dropper or it takes the bottom dropper, you're tight to both of those flies immediately because they're both pretty much tied on the same line. So your hits don't have to get transmitted through any weight, any fly. And also, too, if you tie onto the hook bend, you got to remember, like, the flies ride incorrectly that way, and you can foul up the tails of your flies. Like, I notice, I take some clients out fishing, and usually I rig their stuff up, but if I'm helping somebody, sometimes downstream, you know, he's tying his stuff together, and 9 times out of 10 when I go look at it, if he tied it onto the hook bend, the tails are always smashed, the line's wrapped around the thing a bazillion times. I mean, the fly's ineffective, because I don't know any fly that drifts through the water wrapped up in monofilament or fluorocarbon.
Right.
So
right.
I like to tie the flies on the dropper tags. That's pretty much the best way to do it.
And then your point fly is just tied directly to the tippet.
Directly to the tippet, the longer piece that you tie on. That would,
right.
You know, for example, you take your sighter, you know, like the end of the leader, you tie on 4 to 5 feet of, you know, 5X fluorocarbon. And then onto that, you take a piece about 30 inches and you surgeon's knot that on. And that's how you create the dropper tag and your point fly. That's what you do. If you can visualize that.
All right. Sounds good. I think you cleared that up. Okay. Dealing with equipment, you had mentioned a lot of people are thinking that they need special equipment. We do have a question here from John Nishi in Alberta, Canada, and he wants to know what your rod preference is, soft versus fast action, long versus, you know, 10 to 11 feet versus 8 to 9, weight 3 to 4 versus 5 to 6. So, I know you just mentioned 9 to 10, I think, but why don't you get in a little bit more detail on the rod for the check and Polish nymph.
All right, I'm going to tell you guys all to go out and buy new equipment because you got to get rid of it. No, for check nymphing, a short leader setup, I actually like a slower action rod. Hardy Grays, you know, I have to give credit where it's due. Very inexpensive rod. I think it retails like for $300, and they're not paying me to say this, by the way. It's an excellent rod for that style of fishing. You're fishing close in, casting a leader that, you know, has length, there's no issue. Sometimes you're fishing extremely light tippets, and that rod can protect almost any tippet. The thing can whip fish like no other. So for a short leader system, that's a really, really good rod. And, John, I'd actually like to, you know, make a, you know, an important point. You don't want a fast rod for any of these techniques. What you're looking for when you're fish like a longer leader setup, like a French or a Spanish, you know, leader setup, you don't want an 11-foot rod that's like a wet noodle. What you want is an 11-foot rod that has some backbone up to about two-thirds the rod. Because when you're fishing these longer leader systems, you need to be able to turn over the whole leader. So if you have a rod that's too soft, there's not enough power transmitted in the cast to those flies to make it cast. You can use the Hardy Grays 10-foot 3-weight, but you're not going to be able to cast as far as you would be able to cast with I have an 11-foot 5-weight Hardy Marksman, which is a very good rod for this. And my friend Justin, too bad I broke it. He, I sent it back, but he had the ultimate rod for this. It's the Loop 11-foot 3-weight OptiPeak. That rod can cast any leader to any place you want it to go in the stream. It's my favorite rod for this fishing by far. So,
okay.
The rod has a very stiff butt section, but the tip is very flexible. which you'll find in any, you know, when I was talking to, when I was speaking to Charles at the show, he said that that was one big thing with these rods, is you need a rod for this where it's pretty stiff, you know, mid to two-thirds the rod, and then the tip is very flexible to protect the tippets. And, the, you know, while you can transmit, you know, power to your leader to throw the cast of flies out there. So I hope that answers the question. You don't want something fast because, you know, you're not casting any fly line per se, but you don't want a wet noodle for the long leader techniques. You can use a wet noodle rod for the short leader techniques, and that's fine.
9.5 or most people have 9.5 rods, so they can do the work with that. It just might not be as easy on the casting.
Yeah, as you said. Yeah, it's fine. You can start off the technique with an 8-foot rod. However, you know, eventually you are going to get suckered into buying a 10-foot rod. You know, and Tori that was on here a few weeks ago, it's funny. I used to say, oh, that's, you know, a bunch of nonsense, the 10-foot rods, you know, whatever. And Tori's like, here, borrow mine. I don't think I gave it back to him for 8 months. I was like, this is awesome. I can mend like a professional with this thing. I can, you know, reach distances. I can fish better.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, for all the guys out there that I know, I have a good friend that says he doesn't need any more rods. Well, here's an excuse to get another rod, you know. So
yeah.
if you're think you're done spending money, think again, right?
It's fly fishing. You're never done spending money, right?
Right. Okay, we need to take another quick break, and then we'll come back. We'll talk about try to finish up with Czech and Polish and move on to French and Spanish. So hang tight here. Women's fly fishing in Alaska is owned and operated by well-known female guide Pudge Kleinkopf. Women's fly fishing offers several lodge-based fly fishing schools for women, as well as an array of small group guided trips for women and couples to some of Alaska's best-known waters for salmon, rainbow trout, Arctic grayling, and char. Pudge also leads saltwater fly fishing groups to Mexico each spring. Beginners are welcome and equipment is provided. Learn more about fly fishing for women at www.womensflyfishing.net. That's womensflyfishing.net, or call them at 907-274-7113, 907-274-7113. Well, you're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with Aaron Jasper about European nymphing. If you'd like to ask him a question, just go to our homepage and use that Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. Okay. Aaron, what else do we need to tell folks about Polish and Czech nymphing? How about the delivery of the fly, the actual cast, and how we work this on the water?
Saw a lot of questions that you forwarded me today about high stick nymphing. The delivery of the flies is pretty much the same way. It's the same drift. The only thing that's going to happen is you're going to detect more strikes. It's rather simple. It's about a 45-degree angle away from you. You don't want to fish with much fly line out of the rod tip. And all you're going to do, just envision this, you're standing in the stream, and you turn your hips up, you know, facing towards where you're going to cast. You throw your cast of flies in. Now, do not drop the rod tip, because remember, as I said before, you're going to get strikes on the way down. So the way to detect those is you keep the rod tip high as the flies are descending through the water column so that you can see that. And once the flies reach the bottom, or you could see your leader moving slower than the surface current, you're going to track your rod ahead of the flies really slowly. You're not going to pull the flies along, because I see a lot of people saying, oh, you know, you throw the flies out there. It's easy. You use a heavy fly and you just, you know, track, you know, you drag it along. That's not the case. You're actually just moving your rod at the same speed as the flies on the bottom. And this is where it takes practice. But after doing it for a few times, I guarantee you pick this up pretty easily. So let's go through the whole cast. I teach third grade, so I'll pretend I'm with my class right now. You throw your cast.
Thanks a lot, Aaron. No, it helps because we don't have visuals, and the more visuals you can give us through words is great.
All right, so we're standing there. We're looking at the boulder that's to our right, probably 10 or 12 feet away. You know, you have your flies hanging from your rod. You lift up, and you plop the cast in the water. Now, do not drop the rod tip because, as I said before, the flies descend, you get a strike. You'll miss it. Now, as the flies are going down through the water column, you're going to lower your arm slightly to a point where everything's tight. And then once those flies start to move, you're going to move the rod tip at the same speed as the flies are moving, as the leader's moving. And what you're watching for is those flies to stop. Maybe you're going to feel something in your hand. but you're looking for the line to stop for just something irregular to happen. And so, you know, anyone that's fished with me will tell you, I pull on anything. Like if I think the things, if as soon as I see it stop, I yank. And I totally, you know, attribute that. I played hockey. So of course, one of the only books I really read, you know, besides Cliff Notes when I was in high school was, Wayne Gretzky's autobiography. And he says, you know, if you don't shoot, you won't score. Same thing with fishing. You know, if you don't set the hook, you're not going to catch any fish. So we're going through the drift. And the drift goes from about 45 degrees upstream of you to almost 45 degrees downstream of you. Now, one big mistake that people make is they don't rotate their body with the cast. I find it very important that as you're fishing, you rotate your hips with the cast. Because if you keep your body in the same position, you're not ready. And I call it the ready stance. If you stand there straight up, right, and let's pretend we're playing football, and you're on that line, right, and they say hike. If you're standing there straight up, right, and you're not hunched over a little bit, what's going to happen? They're going to blow you up. So when you're fishing, you need to be a little bit crouched down. I know Joe Humphreys does this, you know, if you watch his video, and he follows the flies downstream till the end. Now, the next little trick I actually learned from watching Vladdy's video. He's a phenomenal fisherman. I was very impressed. At the end of the drift, he actually does a slight hook set at the end of the drift, and that's to get those fish that are holding on to your flies and backing down with them the same speed as the current, because not all fish positively take the flies. Some of them will get the fly in their mouth, and they'll start mouthing it like, oh, boy, something's wrong. And that actual hook set at the end of the drift not only will hook those fish, but it takes your flies out of the water so that you're prepared to make the next cast. So would that actually explain what happens, I think, Roger?
I think so. You're not tailing it out. You're lifting it out before the tail's out at the,
yes,
the drift. I think that's important to know.
Yeah, it's very aggressive. Flies drift downstream from you, hook set with your wrist. This way, everything's traveling up. Now your cast is already, either you're going to hook a fish or your flies are out of the water and you're ready to make the next cast. So with this type of fishing, your flies are in the water all the time. There's no downtime. There's no false casting. Your flies are in the water. You make the drift. You lift up. Either you hook a fish or you don't hook a fish, and you present your flies again.
Okay. So that's now, one of the reasons. You're controlling the depth with the tip of your rod. In other words, most of this fly line is in general going straight into the water almost, right?
Yes.
So that's how you're controlling the depth.
Yes. For example, when I fish these techniques, I'm not taking line in or out. Very rarely will I do that, if ever, during a drift. I'm fishing a fixed amount of line, so I'm not worrying about that at all. Because if you're worrying about manipulating line that's in your hands, you're not giving full attention to, you know, strikes that you might get as you're fishing, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely.
So this way, you know, like when you're fishing, you're able to make up for differences in the bottom contour. You're not fishing, let's say you're going to strike indicator, and then if your flies are set 4 feet, I mean, your weights are 4 feet from your indicator, you need that pretty, constant depth. With this, you can lower and raise the rod tip to make up for differences in the bottom contour of the stream.
And I can see how this would be very good when you're fishing around boulders, you know, those seams just past the boulder, they're always hard to get down into, and I can see how this could work really well for something like that.
This technique is deadly for those spots that are in front of rocks. I will tell you that. You know, a lot of times, I noticed this in the Taylor River, the biggest fish in that river were actually sitting in front of rocks in the cushion. And the same thing holds true in the stream. A lot of guys don't fish that water in front of the rock because they don't have a technique to get the flies to those fish.
Right.
Well, with this, we're using some heavier flies. We're using a short leader. We're actually able to guide the flies into position, into those type of lies that we can catch fish in.
Right. So, anything else you want to say about the pulsion check techniques before we move on?
I'll add one thing here. I saw a lot of people on the questions, and I just wanted to address some of these. Some guys wanted to start it. If I was going to start fishing in this manner, I would definitely start with a short leader setup. It's easier. It's not going to be frustrating to you, and you're going to have immediate success just because you're detecting strikes. So we're going to speak about the French and Spanish nymphing. That's something that you should evolve into. You shouldn't go tie up, a 24-foot leader and go to the stream and say, okay, I'm going to have at it. This is the be-all, end-all. Start off with the shorter leader. catch fish, get confident, and say, you know what, this is good stuff, I'm doing well, I'm having success, and then you're going to build upon those skills, and then you're going to start fishing longer leader systems. Because I'll tell you, like, it does take a lot of skill to cast those leaders. I teach a bunch of different nymph clinics, you know, through my site. You know, we have them, you know, in New Jersey and Connecticut. But also I teach classes for Housatonic River Outfitters, and when I start teaching them the longer leader setup, I start scratching my head. I'm like, oh boy, what did I do today? It takes a lot of skill level and a lot of perseverance and patience and, you know, timing to cast these longer leader setups. So if I was going to start this, if this is the first time any of you guys have heard about this, I would get into the Polish and Czech nymphing type styles first.
Okay. One other thing I just thought of that we haven't talked about really at all is the flies used for Polish and Czech nymphing. Does it, you know, we see these heavily weighted and woven flies and so forth. Is it really, you know, are we just talking about weighted flies, or are we talking about a whole new design principle here? Could we use a hare's ear and a pheasant tail if they were weighted properly?
Oh, of course you can. As a matter of fact, when guys start out this technique, I was doing a presentation yesterday at a TU group in Jersey, and they always ask about the flies. I tell them all, take your favorite flies, the flies you have confidence in, add tungsten beads, lead underbodies, and go have at it. Because, you know, number one, you're going to fish with a new technique, something that already you feel you're at a disadvantage with. But at the same time, you know, like, put everything in your favor. If you think your favorite fly is a gold-ribbed hare's ear or a rubber-leg stonefly, weight that thing and go fish with that fly because you're going to have confidence in it, right? But can I make mention about some of these flies? I got to give Vladdy
sure.
his due.
Oh, yeah.
Because he sent that email today. So
he's probably listening, and it's probably about 3 in the morning over there or something. So, hi, Vladdy.
Hey, how you doing? No. That Vladdy condom worm that he makes, the condom worm, I cannot believe the fish that it's caught all across this country. And that's a fly, I don't even know what you want to classify it as, it's a thing, right? That thing has caught more fish for the guys from my website than you can count. I mean, from big dumb broodstock fish to large holdover fish to, you know, wild fish. Like when I was out in Montana last summer, I was lucky enough to get there on opening day of the Yellowstone River, and that Vladdy worm was hammering, whacking, you know, those wild cutthroat that shouldn't be eating something that's pink and looks like a worm, but it looks like food. And I think Vladdy was one of the first people to weave the flies. Those woven flies that he makes, it's another one. Like, he's a genius when it comes to the fly design and all the different creations that he's come up with. Those woven flies are excellent. I'll venture a little bit into flies here. Maybe we can cover some bases here, you know, make up some ground, because I know there's a lot of fly questions. Flies that work the best with this technique are flies with contrast. And if you look at those woven flies, there's contrast, Roger. You know, there's yellow and brown. There's green and orange. There's white and pink. There's some sort of contrast, whether it's in the fly or it's the bead or it's, you know, a hot spot in some of the check nymphs or a thread collar. There's contrast. I find that the flies that I do the best with now have some sort of contrast. And if you said a year ago or 2 years ago that I was going to make flies with orange dubbing and, you know, hot pink thread, I would have said you're crazy. There's no way. Because I was one of the biggest skeptics to the fly design in these flies, that they weren't going to work. Like, you know, the average guy looks at that Vladdy worm and goes, oh, yeah, that's a scam. No, that thing catches fish everywhere.
Good.
It's bait. And we know how well bait works, don't we?
Well, let's try to zoom through Spanish and French. People want to hear about this. And so I'm going to let you kind of move through this quickly. Tell us how you rig up, how the rigging is different, and why, and how the presentation is different, and what kind of water you would use this in, and just roll here for a few minutes because we are running out of time, okay?
All right. I'll lump them both in. Probably someone in France is probably pulling their hair out now, and you know, but that's okay.
They are similar, though, right?
Yeah. Oh, very similar. As a matter of fact, that you know, the Pyrenees Mountains, they border the both countries, so that's where a lot of these techniques were designed. The fish are really spooky. Like I said, you know, if these guys catch them, they're probably taking them home with them. So they're designed to catch wild trout in heavily pressured waterways. And both these techniques eliminate fly line. As a matter of fact, all these techniques eliminate fly line, but the French and the Spanish eliminate fly line at a distance. And I think that as anglers, we fail to realize the negative effects of fly line hitting the water. And if you have your heavy fly line out of the rod and you're fishing at a distance, I don't think, and I know people will disagree with me, that you're not able to detect the strikes with such accuracy. So what I'll do is I'll go over the leader right now, a typical leader that I would make, and I'll explain the parts and why it is that way. So let's start from the end of my fly line. Like I said, you know, we take everything out. We're at the loop of the line. What I use for my butt section, I use 20-pound clear Maxima. It's very stiff. It has a sheen to it, so you can see it in the air easily. I make my butt section on my average leader is about 12 foot long of the 20 pounds, all right? So I take 12 feet of that, tie it on, and then what I do is I use that Davy knot that's on YouTube under Trout Predator. You guys could search the knot. You take that line and you knot a piece of 15 pound to it. 15 pound test, the same material, clear Maxima, all right? And that's my butt section. That's it, two pieces. So I'm not talking about these elaborate leader systems. I'm talking about something that's really simple that I think anyone can tie. Now you can use the Davy knot that's on the video, or you can use, a barrel knot, or a blood knot. You can use those knots to do this. And then, you know, you spoke to me before about the cider. Okay, I'm trying to go through this fast, but I look at the clock.
Yeah.
Next comes the cider, okay? Now the cider, there's a few different options you can use. You can use any brightly colored piece of monofilament you want. You can use fly line backing for the cider, all right? But if you're going to use fly line backing for the cider, you need to tie perfection loops in each end because none of these knots work with the Dacron backing. They slide out. And also, if I make a cider with the backing, I'll use fluorescent orange backing, 4 to 6 inches of that, and then I'll blood knot that to a piece of chartreuse backing of the same length. I'll tie surgeon's knots, perfection loops in each end, and I'll actually knot my butt section to one end of that, and then I'll knot my tippet going to the flies on the other end. And what that two-color piece of fly line backing does is it creates contrast. And we all know that we can see something with contrast at quite a bit of a distance, right? So that's how these guys can fish flies at a distance away from them, because there's contrast in their leader, all right? Now, some people say, why don't you make the whole leader out of bright material? Now, if we're looking at 18 feet of brightly colored monofilament, our eyes are going to go crazy. They're going to be bugging out of our head. I really believe with these longer leader systems, you need a focal point. You need something small to look at. You can't look at something that long or big and see strikes as accurately as you can with a smaller sighter. And one more option with cider, a lot of people have seen this in magazines. Lauren Williams was the first one to show this to me. It's called a curly whirly, he calls it. It's actually coiled monofilament. This is the coolest thing. You take, your golden strand, you wrap it around a pen. Of course, take the middle of the pen out, or you're going to blow the pen up when you cook it. It's probably the only time I cook, but my friend Alan, the TPO scientist, makes the stuff for me. He takes a pen, he puts it in a drill, and he winds the monofilament on the drill. He boils it for 5 minutes and then freezes it, right? It's a contraption. You take it out of the freezer and you take what would be probably 12 inches of this, and that's your cider. And it's coiled. The coils stay in it because you change the molecules when you heat it up and you freeze the molecules in the coils. So you tie that onto your leader in place of your cider, and it's coiled. So when a fish hits it, it's kind of fun. You see the coils stretch out. You set the hook. It's pretty interesting how they designed that. And that's more of a French thing from what I understand, the curly whirly cider. And the best part about these setups is the only thing that's different is the butt section. The way I tie my flies on with the surgeon's loops onto the tippet is the same for that longer leader system. So what goes into the water, the actual part of your leader that goes into the water, is the same whether you're doing any four of the major methods of the European nymphing. So my leader is a 12-foot butt section to start, and then 6 feet. Now, that's an average. Now, when you're starting off these techniques, because I'm sure people are probably taking notes like crazy now, all you need to remember is you want to keep that butt section, the ratio, 2 to 1. So if you're starting this, I wouldn't do 12-foot, 6-foot. I maybe would start out with 6 feet of the heavy 20-pound test and 3 feet of the 15-pound test. Don't start off with something that's 25 feet long. Like, start off with something that's 15 feet long or 12 foot long, something that's easy to manage for you, or you're going to be cursing me. You're going to say, that guy said on that show that I need to make a 24-foot leader, and it's wrong. No, you know, start off, you know, don't think you're going to go out there with a long leader and be able to cast it. It takes a lot of time.
And are we using the same length rod situation, looking for 10, 11-foot rods? Is that?
If I'm fishing a smaller stream, like at home, there's South Branch of the Raritan, it's 40 to 60 feet wide. I actually like to use the 3-weight there, the smaller rod.
Okay.
I find on that smaller stream with the canopy and everything, if I use the 11-footer, I am decorating trees like it's Christmas. So I don't want to hang too many flies in the trees. So I actually use the shorter rod, so I spend less time in the trees, you know, and more time in the water.
So the reason you would use this kind of method with the very long leader is for fish that are spookier and clearer water, hard to get to kind of situation?
Yeah, well, not only hard to get to, well, yeah, to some extent, but I would use these techniques in water that's not easily wadeable, where I can't get right next to the fish. Like, for example, Madison River, you know, there's certain places in that river, because it's so turbulent, that if you can get your flies 20, 30 feet out, you know, you can reach fish that no one else can reach, and you can identify the takes. So you can, you know, like the longer leader system, you can use on a lot of different water systems. You know, you can actually use the longer leader system with heavy flies in the same scenarios where you would polish nymph or check nymph, if that makes sense. It's an extremely versatile setup.
And the main advantage to it is?
No fly line. You have, you know, you're not creating any drag, you know, any surface disturbance, right? You're detecting the hits more positively because there's no weight used. You're able to fish at greater range. You know, you're not limited. You don't have to do, you know, like in order to get near some of the fish with a shorter leader system, you're going to have to do some dangerous wading. And I know all about that this week, and I filled up the waders like 4 times. It was kind of bad. I had to change.
I'm glad to hear somebody else has done that.
Oh. You know what? I think even if I had magnets on my boots, I would have fell this weekend. It was a rough time.
It happens.
But that longer leader system is very versatile. You can do a lot with it.
Yeah.
You know, but like the one thing is, I want people to take away, you know, just because you know these techniques, it doesn't fit all the different waters that you're going to fish. It does
sure. One
thing.
Yeah. Well, it's always nice to know another way to do it. And, hey, it livens up fishing, you know. Get to try something learn something new, and maybe be successful. A couple of questions here, Aaron. Are there diagrams? You had mentioned the video on the knot. Are there other diagrams or information on this rigging? And where is the best place to go to see some of these Polish-style Vladdy flies and so forth? Any websites you can send them to?
Lauren Williams, flyguysoutfitting.com. Very good fly tutorials. We also have YouTube, Trout Predator. We have all, you know, we do fly to month, and there's a number of weighted flies on there. You know,
okay.
If you tie what's on my Trout Predator site and the YouTube site combined with some of the ones you like from Lauren's site, you're in. You know, you're all set. You can also Google it on the internet. You'll find tons of stuff with this.
Okay, and the site you said, Lauren's site, is again?
Flyguysoutfitting.com.
Okay, flyguysoutfitting.com.
He has the nicest fly tying tutorials that I've seen outside of Charlie Craven's site.
Oh, yeah,
really, really good.
Yeah. Yeah, Charlie's one of the best. He's one of the best photographers, I think, too. He says he's not, but he is. So.
Let me tell you something. That book that he just came out with,
Yeah. Incredible
photography there. I mean, I'm like a kid, you know, I teach third graders, so I guess I get like that. So, like, when I look at a book, I flip through and look at the pictures, and wow, I just love looking at the pictures.
Yeah, that's a good one, and we're hoping to get Charlie on here to talk about his methods. So.
Sorry, one more thing.
Yeah, a few parting words, and we got a closer up here.
It's kind of hard to get me to shut up sometimes. I'm sorry. If you go on our site under Nymph Fishing Discussion and you flip through the threads, there's a Czech or Polish nymphing thread. As a matter of fact, I'll set it as sticky after the program so they can see it, so it's right up at the top. There's a whole book's worth of information in there. I mean, the information in that thread, you can't get that in a book or a video. Like, input from Lauren Williams and Davey, you know, and I mean, I put a little bit on there, you know, and in those guys, my stuff doesn't count. But if you get, if you go on there and you read that entire thread or you look through all the different, you know, you search on our message board, like leader formulas, leader setups, you're going to come up with more information than you can handle. And the whole message board is searchable. You can find anything on there. If you type in the search bar on the message board, you can find anything, you know, everything you never wanted to know about this stuff.
Well, great. And that's, you can ask a question if you can't find it. So,
And we will answer it.
Terrific, terrific. Well, time to wrap things up here. And when we return, we're going to give away a 3-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers and a 1-year subscription to Fly Fusion magazine, and also that $20 gift certificate to Front Range Anglers in Boulder, Colorado. And that certificate you can redeem online or in their shop, either way. The Bristol Bay region of southwest Alaska is home to the largest runs of wild salmon on the planet and some of the best trophy rainbow trout fishing found anywhere. The Pebble Mine still remains a threat to the region, and 2 million acres of federal lands may also be at risk. The entire fly fishing industry has united in this epic conservation battle. Anglers from across the country are joining the fight. Be one of them. Visit www.savebristolbay.org. That's savebristolbay.org, and learn more about how you can get involved. Well, just a quick reminder before you leave our website tonight, take a minute and give us your feedback about the show. You can find a link on our homepage in the section on tonight's show that says, what did you think of this show? Just click on that link and leave your comments. We'd surely appreciate it. And now it's time to give away our prizes. The winners of our drawing are randomly selected from our database, and if you didn't register by now, it's a little too late, but next time, be sure you get registered so you can have a chance at some of these great prizes that we have to give away. So we're going to do the make a random drawing here, and for the Federation of Fly Fishers, again, if you want to learn more about the Federation of Fly Fishers, go to fedflyfishers.org, fedflyfishers.org. So let's see who the lucky winner is going to be here. And first person I pick is Tony Loader in Australia.
Whoa.
Tony Loader in Australia. So we do have people all over the world listening, and congratulations, Tony, and we'll get you hooked up there. And then our second winner is going to get a 1-year subscription to Fly Fusion magazine. That's talking about great pictures, Aaron. That's a great magazine out of Calgary, Canada that has wonderful photography.
Yeah, that's a really good one.
Yeah. So let's see who we can give that to. It's going to be Sean Hansen in Wisconsin. Sean Hansen in Wisconsin. And congratulations, Sean, on winning that subscription. Now, the fun one here where I ask a question about something we talked about tonight. And the first person to answer it correctly with their name and their location, and you do this on the homepage of our website in that text box where you've been asking questions. First one to answer it correctly gets a $20 gift certificate to Front Range Anglers. And by the way, their website is frontrangeanglers.com, frontrangeanglers.com. They also have a great newsletter they send out monthly that has just chock full of information, electronic newsletter. Okay, so here's the question. I don't know how many times Aaron said this during the show, but he referred to a particular knot. What's the name of the knot that he referred to at least 20 times during this show? This is an easy one tonight. They should get that one. You know what I mean, don't you, Aaron?
Oh, yeah. Hey, if I asked my kids that question in school and they didn't get it,
okay.
They'd have some...
Okay, well, we got an answer right away, but I don't think it's what I was looking for.
Oh, no.
But surgeon's knot.
Not 20 times.
Yeah, not 20 times. So there's still a chance, folks. Let's see if somebody else...
Somebody's rolling
around. Here we go. Here
right
we go.
Now.
up in your part of the country here, Alan Bartholomew.
Bartholomew.
Do you know him?
Oh, yeah, I know him. He's Alan's the chief TPO scientist.
Oh, okay, okay. So he says the answer to the question is Davy. Did he get it right?
Yes, he did.
Okay. So, Alan, you need to send me your contact information. You can do it in the same place you just did answer the question. Your name, address, phone number, and email address so that we can get that gift certificate to you. So congratulations, Alan. He probably knew that before the show started, but we all have to go learn this Davy knot now, that's for sure, especially us old guys who can't see, you know, to the end of our arms. So thanks again, guys, for playing. It was great. Thank you, Aaron, for joining us tonight. As usual, we ran out of time, and we might have to revisit this at a later date, but it was a joy having you, and thanks again for spending time with us.
You're very welcome. Had a good time, guys.
Oh, good. Our next broadcast will be on May 20th. That's next week, folks, because I went to Utah at the beginning of this month and went mountain biking, crashed, tore up my face, and so forth. We had to schedule these two shows very closely together. So my adventure in Utah was pretty bloody, to say the least. But so we're going to have another show next week right away. And on that show, we're going to interview Steve Bourne. And our topic for that show is going to be fly fishing the driftless area of the Midwest. Steve Bourne has been fishing these pristine waters of the driftless area of the Midwest for years, and it still lures him back again and again. So find out why this area is so special and learn Steve's secrets for being successful in these waters. We'd like to thank the Federation of Fly Fishers, Fly Fusion Magazine, Keeney's Fly Shop, Royal Gorge Anglers, and Women's Fly Fishing in Alaska for sponsoring our show tonight. If you think your company would benefit from sponsoring one of our shows, give us a call at 1-888-961-1115, extension 2. And we'll be happy to explain the options to you. Don't forget to visit our website at askaboutflyfishing.com and make sure you're signed up to receive our announcements so you won't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Thanks for listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We hope you enjoyed the show. That's it. Good night, everyone, and good fishing.